Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
I'm a lesbian and I am a Christian, and only one of those things has brought me discrimination in my life, and it isn't being a Christian, it's being a lesbian. We're afraid of being denied services simply because of who we are as a family. We're afraid of being humiliated and judged in places where we go to spend time and our money.
That's Pastor Melody Meredith at the Indiana State House. Back in March, she was there to protest the impending signature that was coming to the Religious Freedom and Restoration Act in that state. She was concerned that she was going to be discriminated against under that religious freedom law, that they would open a door of discrimination and intolerance. That term tolerance seems to have been turned almost entirely on its head, or maybe the term intolerance has been turned on its head. Joining us to talk about the intolerance of contemporary tolerance, Greg Kokel. He's a regular guest. He's president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, and he's author of the book Tactics, A Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Greg, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hey, Todd, it's really good to talk with you again. I'm sorry I'm all mixed up here, but great to hear your voice. Glad to chat with you today, Todd.
What's behind the new definition of tolerance, the often unrealized and therefore unstated presupposition or set of presuppositions?
Yeah, well, I was just thinking about this before you called when I wrote it down, and what I wrote was, tolerance now means affirmation. Tolerance now means affirmation. And the odd thing about that definition is that that way of looking at it actually turns the whole notion of tolerance on its head. Because tolerance is a virtue. The word tolerance has a nice feel to it. You know, it's a connotation word. It's like kindness and mercy and forgiveness and tolerance. So we have a good feeling about the word. And the reason we had a good feeling about the word was because of what it used to mean. Now the definition has changed, and the meaning it has changed, but the feeling is still there. So people still think, even though tolerance has been turned on its head, they still think it means something good. Tolerance now means affirmation. It used to be, Todd, that you had to actually disagree with a point of view before you could tolerate it. So maybe I'm a Democrat, not a Republican. I disagree with those guys, but I do tolerate them. I put up with them. I live beside them in decently and in order. I respect their right to have their contrary views or something like that. So that's what tolerance used to mean. I disagree, but I show respect in the midst of the disagreement. Now, if you disagree with specifically politically correct notions, homosexuality especially now you are considered intolerant because you don't promote the thing. And when you don't promote the thing, then people ostracize you for your disagreement, no matter how gracious you're being in the midst of the disagreement. This is why I think that tolerance has now become intolerance, because the classical notion of tolerance, that is showing respect for differing views, is gone now, especially on the political left, if you don't agree with them. Now they can call you names like bigot and intolerant and that kind of stuff, and they can treat you harshly if you don't celebrate these other leftist points of view, particularly the issue of homosexuality now.
And we're not just talking about something as trivial as changing the definition of a word in a dictionary or even in modern parlance. We're talking about genuine consequences in a nation especially that is built upon, that was built upon, a very solid and proper definition of tolerance.
That's right. Well, think about think about how definitions actually happen, Todd. Definitions happen because people use words in certain ways. We use words to describe things. In this particular case, we're describing a moral virtue, where a way that somebody acts towards other people with whom they disagree. And that is, in virtue of the fact that we are made in the image of God, this is a Christian notion, by the way, the classical sense of tolerance, then we're to treat them in a certain way. This word has been hijacked, though, and over the last 20 years, people have used it very, very differently, not realizing they've been taken in. So the word still feels like a good thing, but it turns out to be a bad thing the way it's practiced. Now, tolerance means, like I said, approval, and it means that implicitly. It's because people have been using it so much this way that if you don't agree with homosexuality in this case, if you don't kind of give it the nod, say it's okay, vote for same-sex marriage, etc., then you, by the new way of using the term, now you are the intolerant person. Now, this makes it very difficult to argue for the classical virtue, because just by going against the grain here, you're going to be labeled with this vice called intolerance, even though you're not really guilty of it. So we are up against a change, not just in a simple dictionary definition, but a change in the way the culture is using the word.
Okay, you wrote years ago about something called the tolerance trick, and you tell the story about going to a Christian high school with a group of kids there. You wrote on the board, "All views are equally valid. No view is better than another." They all seemed to agree. Then what did you do?
Yeah, well, that was in Des Moines, and it was a very memorable occasion because this was a Christian school. And these were seniors in the Christian school, and I was invited to speak in their religion class because I happened to be in town that weekend, and I had some free time, so they plugged me in there with the group. And I wanted to talk to them. I wanted them to see how much they'd been taken in by this postmodern notion of tolerance, of acceptance. And so we got talking about it, and I wrote the definition on the board that they were probably exposed to. All views are equally valid, and no view is really better than any other view. So I wrote that on the board. That's kind of the classic, I should say, what they understood to be the classic definition of tolerance. And they were all nodding because there was nothing controversial there. Then I wrote another sentence on the board. The other sentence was, "Jesus is the Messiah, and Jews who reject him are wrong." And I'm telling you, that classroom came alive when I said that, or wrote that on the board, because on their understanding of tolerance, this would be a very intolerant thing to say. In fact, one student said that. She raised her hand and she said, that's intolerant to say this. Keep in mind, these are Christians. And so I drew attention to the original definition of tolerance that they're working on, and working from, I should say. And I said, is this a view, that all views are equally valid? Is that a view? Well, yeah, that's a view. Okay, how about this? Is that Jesus is the Messiah and Jews who reject him are wrong? Is that a view too? Well, it took a little while for it to sink in, and finally it did, though. Obviously, it is a view. Well, if on this definition of tolerance, all views are equally valid, then, wow, no view could be intolerant, could it? Even this one that claims that Jesus is the only way of salvation. So now they're stuck. Because the way they're using the word tolerance, and this is the way it's happening even now in our culture, the way people are using it, it turns out to be self-defeating. It turns out to make tolerance really a one-way street where people want you to be tolerant of their views, the leftist, popular, politically correct views, but then when it comes to your disagreement of that, oh, man, they don't have any tolerance at all for that. They think you're wrong. But they do not see the contradiction. And in fact, the students didn't see it. I had to spell it out for them and beat it into their heads before they saw it. They've been so socialized, even as Christians, to this distorted, twisted, and self-refuting notion of tolerance.
Now, behind this is kind of the jello, the loosely, very loose jello of postmodern thinking, if we can call it thinking. It's as you said, it's often self-refuting. It's more of a feeling sometimes, or just a general sense. How would you describe the connection between the basic idea of postmodernism and what we found here in the new definition of tolerance?
Yeah, I think they go hand in hand, Todd. I think it's a great observation. You have a couple of things happening at the same time, but they're big, giant things that are happening largely under the surface. This is why I used the word socialize a few moments ago. You're right. People aren't thinking about things. They're not assessing. They are not living an examined life. They are just reacting, responding to the influences around them, especially their social group and their friends. This is true of Christians as well as non-Christians. It's a standard way that people learn. And the postmodern impulse, starting from the 60s, really, is a relativistic impulse. It's a way of thinking, well, nobody's got the right answer. Everybody just has their own answer, you know, and there are different ways to cash this out philosophically. But it really comes down to you have your view and your view is good, and I have my view and my good. He's got his view. Let's not all fight about it. Let's just all agree to disagree. That's kind of the way it started. Like, everybody's view is, here we go back to that definition, equally valid, right? What they don't realize, that's the postmodern thing. We can't know truth, especially in these areas. And so let's just tolerate each other. But you see, what they did is they took the tolerance and they advanced it as a moral virtue. And when you advance any particular thing like tolerance, no matter how you define it, as a moral virtue, notice that implicitly that they're advancing it as an objective moral virtue. So on the one hand, they're saying you can't know what's right or wrong. Then they're saying we ought to tolerate all these different views, which implies that they know that at least one thing is really right for everybody, and that's tolerance. And so while they're speaking like relativists, they are advancing an objectivist or an absolutist view at the same time. That's part of the contradiction. The second part of the contradiction, and this, every person who falls into postmodernism, except for the most careful, falls into this problem. They start pointing the finger at other people, saying that their views are wrong, and the postmodern view is the correct view. And the minute you start pointing the finger at other people, you become intolerant in behavior of those other people. This happens all the time. And so it just shifts the power center to a different place. The postmoderns didn't want the moderns to be in power. They abused the power, and they isolated people and marginalized people. And so what now? The left, the postmodernists, are using power to marginalize and isolate those people that disagree with their so-called tolerant view.
Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about the intolerance of contemporary tolerance on this Wednesday afternoon, April the 22nd. He's president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of the book Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. You'll find a link to this book and to Stand to Reason at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. When we come back, we're going to talk about how you can, and it's not easy to do, but how you can escape the tolerance intolerance trap.
There ain't no good guy, there ain't no bad guy, there's only you and me, and we just disagree.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com, lutheracademy.com, and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I just find it fascinating that so many of the issues that are out there right now are based on this false notion that men and women are completely interchangeable.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I mean, all these really hot button issues are based on some confusion about where men and women are equal, in what terms are they equal, and then, you know, most importantly, how are we different, and is that difference a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, what does God have to say about these differences, and, you know, how should the Christian think about these differences? So I am so excited to come to this conference and talk about these issues, which animate so much of our political and social and cultural discourse, and also the things we struggle with in the church as well.
You can meet and hear Molly Ziegler-Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Where I think we are in the culture, but also with religious institutions, is that people have stopped hating us, that is to say LGBT people, but they're not yet ready to celebrate us. I mean, I think that's the next big work to do.
That's Gene Robinson from several years ago. He's the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA, talking about the goal is not just to tolerate, not just to be tolerated, but to be celebrated. We're talking about the intolerance of contemporary tolerance. Greg Kokel, president of Stand to Reason, is our guest. Greg, how does one, first of all, extricate one's self from the tar pit of this kind of postmodern morass, and then help other people see, and it's very difficult when you have someone who's been thoroughly schooled in the postmodern mindset, for them to even recognize this. How do you do it?
You're right. It is difficult, Todd. And so what I always revert to is a tactic of asking a series of questions to help involve them in the process of peeling back this deceptive element and help them to see what's really going on. And what's really going on, and just a repetition of what we covered earlier, is that the way contemporary tolerance is practiced, it turns out to be self-refuting. It doesn't allow, actually, for a competing views. And so here's when somebody calls you intolerant, here's the way to work it out tactically in a conversation. Whenever they call you intolerant, I always ask a question. And in this particular case, I ask for clarification of the term. Why are you calling me intolerant? So that's my question. They say you're intolerant. You say, why do you say that? In other words, what am I doing that makes them think that I'm intolerant? Well, they tell me quickly, one way or another, it amounts to, I think that I'm right. Whether it's a religious view or a moral view, I think I'm right and other people are wrong. That's what offends them. Now, of course, if I'm going to advance my point of view, I do think that I'm right, and I think the guy I disagree with is wrong. I mean, that's just the way it works, you know. Of course I think I'm right. Now, I'm willing to say in a lot of things, I might be mistaken, I'm interested in talking about it, whatever, but I do think I'm right. But here's the key, Todd. I am not the only one in the conversation who thinks his view is right. The other guy thinks his view is right, too. And so when he represents to me that the reason he's calling me intolerant is because I think I'm right and he's wrong and other people that are different than me are wrong, I have to ask, here's my next question. What about your own view? Do you think your own view is wrong? That is the view that we're talking about here. You know, do you think you're wrong or do you think you're right? Actually, the better way to say is, do you think you're right? Of course he thinks he's right. That's why he's got his view, you know. And now he might say, well, I think my view is right for me, which, of course, is a little bit dishonest because if his view is only right for him, then why is he talking to me right now? He's talking to me because he disagrees with me. He thinks I'm wrong, and he thinks he's right, and that's why we're having the discussion. So, of course, he thinks he's right. Now, I have a final question that is meant to help him to see what's really going on. Remember, he says, Greg, you're intolerant. I say, what do you mean by that? He says, well, you think you're right. I say, well, I do think I'm right, but do you think you're right? And he said, yeah, I think I'm right. My final question. How is it, why is it, when you think, when I think I'm right, I'm intolerant, but when you think you're right, well, you're just right. What am I missing here? And the questioning is that whole sequence there, dealing with the passive-aggressive tolerance trick is what I call it, is meant to show them that they are doing the very same thing they think that I'm doing. I'm disagreeing with them because I think I'm right. They're disagreeing with me because they think they're right. They're doing the same thing, but they think they're justified in calling me a name like intolerant or bigot or something like that. And that's just simple name calling at that point. I mean, would it be appropriate for me when I disagreed with them to say, well, you're ugly? I wouldn't say that, obviously, but because it's inappropriate. But how is that different? If I attack their personnel or their looks, they attack my character. We are both off topic. We are not talking anymore about Jesus or homosexuality or same-sex marriage or abortion or whatever the topic may be. You see, this tolerance trick people use is just a simple way of ad hominem name-calling to get you off the topic, but they don't see it, Todd, because they've been so socialized to do it. They think this is a legitimate response, and you got to use a questioning tactic like I just offered to help them, get them off their game and shake them up a little bit and help them to see that this is just old-fashioned name-calling in disguise.
Why is it important to distinguish between tolerance of persons versus tolerance of behavior or ideas?
Well, because nobody tolerates all behavior. And that's why we have laws, for goodness sake, you know. Some behavior is simply destructive. And so we say no to certain behaviors because they hurt other people in a way that's really damaging to society. And so the fact that we have laws demonstrate that we don't tolerate all behaviors. And in a certain sense, we don't tolerate all ideas. We certainly tolerate the expression of them, but we don't tolerate them in the sense that we say, well, every idea is just as good as any other idea. No, there's some ideas that are good, some are bad, some are stupid, some are dangerous. And we ought to have the freedom in public discourse to try to figure out which one is which and argue for my point of view. The freedom to argue for one's point of view in a generous and a gracious way is called the tolerance of persons, which is the thing that's the virtue. Yes, I can disagree with your idea and say your idea should not be in play. I can disagree with your behavior and in some cases think you should be restricted in that behavior and maybe even punished. But when it comes to you expressing your point of view and your own convictions and indeed holding your convictions, that's where we draw the line, and we say tolerance means respecting that right. And we don't punish you either by some legal means or punish you by calling you names because you don't share our point of view. But this is exactly what the whole tolerance game has become, an act of a legal club to beat up people who disagree with the rank and file now.
You say, and it's in the vein of what you were just talking about, Greg, you say that we ought to be, and I like it's terse, it's to the point, be egalitarian regarding persons, be elitist regarding ideas. Take that apart for us.
Yeah, that is actually, I agree, it's a very clever way of putting it. I wish I could take credit for it, but Peter Kreft from Boston College is the one I got that from, and it's a very simple way of this. Making clear what classical tolerance entails. Be egalitarian regarding people. That is, we're to treat people with equal dignity and respect, regardless of their ideas, etc. We are to treat them with grace because, now this is Christian grounding here for that, because the human being is made in the image of God. But when it comes to ideas, we ought to be elitist. And this is what I told those students in that high school class. They knew what an elitist was. They a snob. Well, what's a snob? Well, a snob is somebody who thinks he's better than somebody else. Well, yes, in a certain sense, we should be snobbish about ideas, meaning we should consider some ideas better than others. Now I ask the students, then, why would we consider some ideas better than others? Well, obviously, because they are. So if we follow this principle, be egalitarian regarding people, but be elitist regarding ideas, then we will have the atmosphere, I think, Todd, where we can engage in different ideas, toss them back and forth in a respectful way, and then let the best idea win. That's classical tolerance.
With about 1 minute here, is that really possible, around the water cooler with somebody else who has pulled out the intolerance card. Is it possible today to do that?
Yes, it is possible, but you have to be a little bit quick on your feet. You have to be able to see this trick for what it is, and hopefully the explanation I just offered will help your listeners, Todd, to see this. And then you have to maneuver graciously to point out that the other person is just using name-calling to get ahead of this discussion instead of really dealing with the issue itself. That can be tricky, but it can be done. Just keep your temper in the process and be nice about it.
Greg Kokel is president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, author of a great book called Tactics, a Game Plan for Discussing Your Christian Convictions. Greg, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Todd.
Right in the vein of relativism, postmodernism, Pastor Jonathan Fisk is going to be making the case for the church's response to postmodernism at this summer's Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference. He's just one of six speakers who will be there over those 2 days. He'll be joined by Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, David Menton, Dr. Paul Meyer, Chris Rosebrough, and Pastor Will Whedon. Registration for the conference is $100 for adults, and child care will also be provided at $35 per child. Our attendance this year is limited to 400, and it continues to rise well past the halfway point with about 2 months to go until the conference. So you do want to register. Find out more at our website, issuesetc.org. You can also contact Craig, 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, or send him an email. He'll help you register that way too. Craig@issuesetc.org, Craig@issuesetc.org. It's the Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference, Friday, June the 19th, Saturday, June the 20th, right here in Collinsville, Illinois. Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we're going to discuss fascism with Dr. Jean Edward Veith. It's kind of related to what we've been talking about here for the last half hour. This notion, now writ large in law, or at least in social movements and in the courts, that we cannot tolerate certain freedoms. Certain freedoms will bring about discrimination, like religious freedom, is now being equated one for one with the freedom to discriminate against persons. Now, fascism will start by saying we simply want to protect certain freedoms, and in order to do that, we have to take away others, but eventually it takes away all of them. So we'll discuss fascism tomorrow with Dr. Jean Edward Veith, and we'll continue our weekly series, Christ in the Old Testament, with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you then. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues, Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among His people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues, Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.